Having taken the quiz, I'd like to know, how did things go for you? Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, CG. The idea there is that computer generated, when you have sufficient time, and that was the case with all these images, there was sufficient amount of time to render them so that they all the detail went in there. And what's important to note about that is some people aren't as sensitive to minor details. Some people get a better score than others. And at the end of the day, what you still have there is obvious, if enough attention is given, obvious differences that aren't yet masked. That is, the human eye can pick them up. But this test is now several years old, and the technology today can produce results that human beings simply cannot distinguish. And that is a scary truth, that with enough offline rendering time, non-real 3D rendering time, that the human visual system, the human visual system can be fooled completely. And we're getting to that stage, and still about, I would say, you know, the start of it really is going to be in a few years on what we call commodity desktops, average desktops. But the start of this process for real time is just starting. And by that I mean that in a couple of years, that kind of quality that you just saw is going to start being possible on some desktop computers. And some desktop computers mean a student, a freshman at the time, buys a brand new computer and doesn't go for middle of the road, doesn't go for low end, but goes for, you know, a top of the line computer and buys it. That computer in a couple of years will be able to do the kind of quality in real time that you just saw on that quiz. And what that means is virtual worlds and video games are getting to a stage where the characters, the humans, and the synthetic humans, the avatars, and the environments, the objects that are around them, are going to start to look a lot like the content, at least the quality of the content, that you saw in that quiz. And that marks a big change in computer graphics. We're still not there yet. I would say the beginning of that stage is happening probably around 2010, so it's still some ways off. But it's going to happen. It's inevitable. It's already happening in high-end systems and labs. So what I'm talking about appearing on the desktop is in fact happening inside of research centers and scientific laboratories and in very high-end computer graphics environments. It's just a matter of time, thanks to Moore's Law combined with the new 3D graphics law, which says things double in power every 9 months, not 18 months. It's just a matter of time before that stuff comes, that hardware capacity finds its way out of the labs and out of the high-end graphics workstations and starts appearing on the average person's desktop and laptop. And that's still, I would say, around 2010, give or take, is when it's going to start to happen. And so for the average person, the typical person that will start to see that sort of thing in 3D, probably depends on when they buy a computer, but it's going to be some point starting around 2010 going all the way up to 2020. There's a big span of time in there. But it's important to note that, you know, the idea of synthetic humans isn't rooted in real-time 3D. In fact, many people in the industry didn't think you'd ever get to a time and place where you could create a realistic-looking human character or what's known as a humanoid. The concept of a human character we all understand and know. The concept of a human being we know. We call them avatars in virtual worlds. In video games, we call them players. For the most part, are characters. But they represent humans. Well, there's another class as well, known as a humanoid. Not quite human, but not a plant or a tree. And a humanoid might be a hobbit, for example. It might be a creature that looks human, but clearly isn't. Did any of you see Lord of the Rings? Okay. In Lord of the Rings, oops, got a little bit of a feedback there. In Lord of the Rings, the Gollum character, Sméagol, was a good example of a humanoid that was completely computer generated, CG. And again, CG. Gollum was not human, or not an actor in a suit. That Schmeagle, that Gollum character, was completely computer generated. And the way by which they computer generated him is that they spent about 2 years, and I say they, is a team of artists at a New Zealand company, graphics company called Weta, W-E-T-A, and that's Peter Jackson's company. And that organization, these are digital graphic artists, these are professionals who work in this space, they spent, I believe it was about 2 years' time and about 100 digital artists together, spent about 2 years designing what Schmeagle or Gollum should look like. They went through all of these prototypes and tests and worked on it, and they eventually arrived at, this is Gollum, Schmeagle, this is what he looks like. He's a humanoid, not a human, and here's what this character looks like. And then they built a complete 3D representation of him in three dimensions. And so they used professional 3D graphics hardware and professional 3D graphics software, and they built digital Gollum. Then they had a actor, Andrew Semeckis, and you're going to read about that in a moment. He gave all of the motion and the behavior of this digital character. And so what this actor did was he basically stood in for Schmeagle or Gollum in all of these scenes, and he did all the motions and all of the body, and he wore a body sensor suit that was able to be picked up and do something called mocap or motion capture. And it captured all the motion of Schmeagle. So he became the embodiment of the physical movements of Schmeagle. And that data was captured, and it was fed in to control the digital Schmeagle. So there was a combination. At the end of the day, it was all digital. Everything that you saw up on the screen was digital. His movements were digital. His body and his face were digital. Everything was digital, but they used a human being to stand in for him in the scenes. And while he was standing in, the motion capture was happening, which means everything that he did physically was captured into digital data, and then that digital data was piped in to or attached to the digital Schmeagle so that they could control what this digital Schmeagle looked like. So what I'd like you to do is two things, two readings at about 10 minutes each, and we'll take a little bit of a break as well. So I would say we will build into this a 5 to 10 minute break just to make sure everybody has a chance to read, but there are two readings. One is a Christian Science Monitor reading that is about the rise of synthespians. And so if you go into our class notes, there is a link called The Rise of Synthespians. And that link, you know, don't click on anything after you get into that page. Just read that article. And then go directly into something called The Uncanny Valley. So you want to read the Christian Science Monitor article on the rise of synthespians. That'll take about 10 to 15 minutes. And then you will want to read The Uncanny Valley. And that's about another 10 to 15 minutes. So, and if you happen to finish them early, don't blaze through them. You know, we want to have a discussion about this and a conversation. Don't rip through it. But do read them and get a sense for both of those. And if you have extra time, take a little bit of a break. But we'll meet back here in 30 minutes to have a discussion around both the articles and the concept of what the Uncanny Valley is and how it applies. All right, so I'll meet you back here in 30 minutes. Wonderful. Enjoy the readings. I'll see you all soon. Bye-bye.